Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Talk about deep cuts. Never before heard recordings of some of jazz's greatest artists. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, a newly discovered treasure of jazz broadcasts can add to music history. And later, the Parisian-based Afro-funk band BB Tonga and the Selenites do their own crate digging for pieces of the musical past. But first, we thought the history books were closed on the story of jazz in the mid-20th century. But this week, the National Jazz Museum in Harlem acquired nearly 1,000 broadcast radio performances taped by an engineer named William Savory. This so-called Savory collection is adding new layers to the story of jazz as we know it. To discuss this mysterious treasure trove of music and what it might mean, we're joined in our studio today by the director of the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, Lauren Schoenberg. Lauren, welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be here, John. Good to see you again.
Now, you have been chasing this collection for 30 years. How does it feel, finally, to have it in your hands, so to speak?
Well, if you want to keep on that line, we'll call it every collector's wet dream. it's the collector story of collector stories. I never dreamed it would happen to me, but it did.
How did you even know there was a collection to be hankering after for all these years?
Well, in 1980, I went to work for Benny Goodman, and I met the people in and around him. And I met a man named Bill Savory. And Savory, I knew, had been a recording engineer. And I knew that he had recorded some Benny Goodman material off the air that had been issued on Columbia Records in the early 50s. So when I met him, I said, Bill, every track on those records is so great. How did you pick the best of what you had? And he just looked at me and said, I didn't pick the best of what I had. I picked the best of what was in the first box. Frankly, that's what he said. And that's about all he said. And that started 24 years of cultivation on my part that came to absolutely naught, zero, zilch.
The guy wouldn't give you anything.
But, you know, we found out later, you know, that he worked for the intelligence agencies. He was a mysterious genius of technology, and he knew how to put somebody off. So it was always, you know, yeah, sure, Lauren, you know what, call me in March. You know, I call him in March and call me in September. This went on for 24 years. Yeah, and the thing, John, was that we didn't know exactly what it was. I mean, I knew that he had a collection, and I, like everyone else, assumed that it was just Benny Goodman material, which would be great because in the Goodman Band, you have Charlie Christian, Teddy Wilson, Lionel Hampton, Gene Krupa, plus guests. I mean, Billie Holiday was a guest on his show. So that's what we anticipated finding. And frankly, I thought that this collection probably comprised 100 discs of Benny Goodman.
And instead, you found yourself with
975 discs, of which Goodman was probably about a third.
Hmm. Well, now, you were working for Benny Goodman. Did you at some point turn to Benny and say, hey, man, you got to help me with this guy. It's been years. He keeps putting me off. I want to hear the stuff. Where was Benny Goodman in all this?
No, I laugh only because if you knew Benny, I mean... the closer you got to Benny, the stranger it was. I mean, he was a wonderful musician and actually a good friend of mine, I'm honored to say, but he was eccentric, and all he was really concerned with was, you know, does the G-sharp sound better with two fingers or the index finger and the pinky? So to go to him, the reason I laughed was like with a question about, help me find your old recordings, man. I mean, I couldn't find out what day of the week it was from him, you know.
So okay. So that
he
was
would not have helped with that.
That was not going to happen. But you did persevere. And then finally, after all these years, this collection of recordings by Bill Savory is now residing at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem. And by golly, it does include Benny Goodman and the great guitarist Charlie Christian, recorded in 1939.
Thank you.
Shivers was recorded in 1939 off the radio by the audio engineer William Savory, Bill Savory, Benny Goodman, and Charlie Christian playing guitar. Lauren Schoenberg, you want to tell people who the Vibes player here was?
Sure, that's Lionel Hampton and Fletcher Henderson on the piano.
Just simply an extraordinary conglomeration of mid-20th century jazz talent.
It's really true. You know, and one thing I just want to mention for those listening, and also for those not listening, is that these are flat...
Pay attention, you people not listening.
Right. These are flat transfers being done by a wonderful sound engineer named Doug Pomeroy. And he's doing these flat transfers.
Now, what does that mean?
What that means is it's like an X-ray, or it's a complete audio picture of the disc as it is now.
So this is
with
before...
minimal editing.
Okay.
And so we're
I want to follow up on that in just a bit. Lauren Schoenberg is with me in the studio. He's the director of the National Jazz Museum in Harlem. But also joining us on the line is New York Times reporter Larry Roeder, who broke the story earlier this week. Larry, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks very much. Good to be with you again.
You know, a lot of us, Larry, I certainly have, you may have as well, have taped songs off the radio at some point or another. I know it's, in theory, illegal. But what Savory was doing, this is a whole different level. I mean, tell us a little bit of the backstory here.
Well, you know, he was, as Lauren has said, you know, a technical genius. You know, he showed an aptitude really early on. You know, he was also a musician, a player. He played mostly piano, and so he had a sense for things. But he was working for, you know, radio transcription services, you know, in a studio here in New York, you know, documenting what was being broadcast, and, you know, using what was at that point really state-of-the-art technology. You know, the recordings that people would buy in those days were 10-inch 78s, mm-hmm. And the capacity is really about 3 minutes, you know, a little bit more maybe. He was working with, you know, 12 or even 16-inch discs, a lot of which he was recording at 33 and a third, so you get a lot more music on there, which enabled him to, you know, get in complete performances. You know, some of the stuff that Lorne has had me listen to, you know, 6 minutes, you couldn't get that on a conventional 78. It's only because Savory was working the way he was, where he was working, that we're able to get these complete long-form performances with the top musicians of the day, jamming, playing free and relaxed in a setting where there's an audience and the audience is spurring them on.
So it's a real reflection of the way these guys played when they were not constrained to a 3 minute side.
Right, right. Because the studio is always different. You know, these are live performances. You know, they don't have the clock ticking. They don't have to worry about cutting a solo short to make it fit. They're really relaxed on this material.
So who was this guy working for? I mean, you say he's sitting in a New York studio. He's got this great equipment. He's got all these feeds from radio coming into the room. Where were these things meant to go?
That's a good question. Let's see, who was he working for? Lorne, you know, I mean, he recorded all kinds of things. The studios that he worked for, I guess, had all kinds of clients. You know, the radio networks, NBC, ABC, CBS. But, you know, actually, I don't know the answer to that question.
You know, we don't know the actual name of the specific studio that he worked at. We're probably going to find it because among the collection that we brought back to the National Jazz Museum in Harlem were a few boxes of papers and things like that. So we'll find the name of the place. But short story is that he worked at a place that had the direct lines from all the networks because that's what their gig was to mm-hmm. record straight off. So that's what he did.
And again, in 1939, Bill Savory recorded Jumpin' at the Woodside with Count Basie and featuring Lester Young on sax. We'll be right back. Spezi in 1939 with Jumpin' at the Woodside, and Lester Young, freed from the limitations of having to fit onto a three-minute record, is able, Lauren Schoenberg, to kind of stretch out, you know, to step out a bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I really think of this collection as kind of, let's say that we found out that there was a classic book by a classic author, Mark Twain or Hemingway or Ralph Ellison, whatever, and there was a chapter that they had intended to be in the book, and it was excised against their wishes. It was really part of the structure of it. But it came out and it became famous. Well, that's kind of like what of our understanding of the swing era is. And this amount of material, I mean, it's not just the quality, it's the quantity of material. I mean, there's over 100 hours worth of stuff. It kind of forces us to reassess a lot of the judgments that we've made about who was Lester Young, who was Benny Goodman, who was Duke Ellington. It's that significant.
What about the, I mean, just listening to Count Basie there, for people who are not, you know, musicologically inclined, the first thing they're going to notice is the snap, crackle, pop, you know, the surface noise and stuff. So how, what kind of restoration issues are we talking about here?
There's a wonderful engineer. He lives in Brooklyn. His name is Doug Pomeroy. And when I originally called him to do this, he said, Lauren, look, man, you know, I'm retiring from the business. God bless you. I'll help you find somebody. And I said, Bill Savory. And he became available. So we have the world's greatest.
So the name Bill Savory was enough to unlock yet another door.
Amongst the collector's world. And to make a long story short, he's very much involved, as we were talking about before, doing the flat transfer of the material. And once we get all the stuff into the digital domain, then he's going to go back, and then we can very easily get rid of the snap, crackle, and pop without losing the music that's in the overtones.
Easy for you to say. You don't have to sit there and do it, but I'm sure he'll figure out a way. Larry, do you agree with Lauren's assessment that we really do need to kind of reassess what we think about people like Lester Young and Coleman Hawkins and people like that?
Yeah, well, you pick a good example with Coleman Hawkins because the version of Body and Soul that Lauren made available to me is you know, that's one of the great recordings in the history of jazz to begin with. But, you know, it is locked into that three-minute or so length. And the version that Lauren, you know, has made available to me and which we put up on the New York Times website, you know, an excerpt from it, that's a six-minute version. He plays much, much longer, much, much freer, and he's very, very daring. I mean, you know, he's one of the great figures of jazz anyway, but this is just, like, breathtaking where he goes. You know, in the final chorus of this live performance, he's really out on an edge. You know, you think, oh, he's about to fall off, but no, it's a really acrobatic, but also extremely well-thought-out performance. These arpeggios, these scales that he's playing, it's really unusual for the time, spring of 1940.
Well, let's hear. I want to give listeners an opportunity to actually hear what you're talking about, Larry. So here is Coleman Hawkins and the familiar commercially recorded version of Body and Soul. Familiar with Coleman Hawkins doing Body and Soul, but they won't be familiar with this version. This is from the Savory Collection. Just a little bit, because that's really all we have at the moment. The Savory Collection, this treasure trove of jazz masters from the 30s and 40s, still in the process of being digitized and edited and all that kind of stuff. And Larry Roeder's article on the story in the New York Times, there is a link to that article on the Soundcheck page, WNYC.org. You'll also find a link to the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, where these recordings now live, thanks to the efforts of jazz historian and director Lauren Schoenberg. And Lauren, Larry was telling us that that second version of Coleman Hawkins just gets stranger and stranger as it goes along.
There's a clip. Actually, there's two clips. We have one clip at the Jazz Museum website, and the New York Times actually has a different one. And if you go to the Times website, you'll hear him going a little more berserk towards the end of it. But, you know, I just want to introduce just one comment, one concept, and that's the concept of this being additive. And it's not that anything is replacing anything. It's not as though this is better than the original one. Nothing will ever take the place of that original version because that's the one that every jazz musician cut his teeth on playing. But what we have now, again, is, you know, like an expanded chapter by Mark Twain or something like that. Or, you know, a scene in a beloved Chaplin film that now we get to see a second version of where he did it twice as long. And it's really kind of like it feeds the classic one. I will mention that at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, we will be featuring these live recordings unedited in our Tuesday night series.
When?
Tuesdays in September. Mm-hmm. It's called Jazz for Curious Listeners, just one of our many free things. We have Steve Coleman.
I assume you'll have a lot of curious listeners for this series. Which Tuesday do you
begin
on?
It's every Tuesday, the first Tuesday
the
in September,
okay.
From 7 to 8:30, and you can find more information at our website.
All right, and again, a link on the soundcheck
and
page.
And one person that really deserves credit here, whose name we have to mention, are two people. One is Bill Savory's son, Gene Savory from Malta, Illinois, who will actually be at the museum along with Larry Roeder and George Avakian on September 25th. He's the guy who saved it from the garbage bin. And also,
and when you couldn't get it from Dad, you finally got it from the son.
From the son, who found 24 years worth of letters for me in his dad's files. And also, our wonderful board member. We have a board member named Jonathan Scheuer, and him and his wife won the Sundance Award this year for best film for Winter's Bone. Yeah. And he purchased the collection for the museum, and we owe him a large debt.
Larry. You actually visited with the long suffering engineer tasked with cleaning up all of these recordings and stuff. How big a job? How long a wait do you think we're looking at here?
Doug was saying what, maybe another 10 months, Lorne, right? Something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But you know what? I mean, it is a real amazing task. But he's enjoying it because he's coming across stuff that he didn't expect. You know, one day when he and I were talking, he was working on a Count Basie track where Lester Young is playing clarinet, not saxophone.
Mm.
You know, and Lorne has played for me a track where Teddy Wilson is playing harpsichord instead of piano. So there's these surprises, you know, guys doubling on instruments that aren't their normal instruments, that sort of thing sprinkled throughout the collection. And, you know, I know from talking to Doug that he's having a great time when he finds those. You know, yeah, it's tough work, but there's compensation artistically.
So at the Jazz Museum in Harlem, interested listeners, curious listeners, can show up on Tuesday evenings to start pouring through some of these rare old recordings being heard for the first time since they were originally broadcast back in the 30s. It's an amazing find. Lauren Schoenberg, congratulations after 30 years of trying to get it, finally getting your hands on it and eventually sharing it with the rest of us.
Thanks, John.
And Larry Roeder, who wrote the story for the New York Times. Larry, thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
And coming up in just a moment, weekly CD picks from the Soundcheck staff. But first, again from the Savory Collection, I Got Rhythm, 1938, Bunny Berrigan, Slim Galliard, Slam Stewart, Cozy Cole and Company. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, B.B. Tonga and the Selenites have already made quite a stir in France with their futuristic funk sound. They'll be with us here in the studio to play music from their new album, Dunya. That's coming up on Soundcheck.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
There were actually many radio fans who recorded music from broadcasts. We seem to have a built-in need to document stuff. and apparently a need to think that the things we do now have never been done before. Well, these tapes are like the 1940 equivalent of kids today snapping pictures or taking videos on their cell phones.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.